on RNIB Connect Radio.
Family Cooking with You Can Do Magic, welcoming you to today's happy hour. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. Paulina here, keeping you company for the next hour. I have some really nice tracks lined up for you, including a classic one from Heaven 17, and I'll also throw in some Foo Fighters, but I won't tell you exactly when, but it will come up later in today's show. And of course, we'll be chatting about all things happiness, well-being, as well as staying well physically and mentally. So we'll be hearing from Nikki Coburn, who has quite an interesting story. A tragic event in her life has led her to finding out a little bit more about counseling and how the service can help other people, and can also specifically support those who own guide dogs and maybe have to struggle with the readjustment of losing a guide dog or maybe even retiring a guide dog. So she'll be telling us a little bit more about that and counseling specific for that, and just in general how counseling can help our mental health. We'll be chatting visually impaired sailing with VI sailor later in this hour. Emily Wright is her name, and she has just had some really great success at championships not long ago, so she'll be telling our Toby Davy more. And we'll also hear a personal sight loss story later in this hour with Bernie Warren. Now, of course, a really exciting show. I hope you enjoy it, and if you have any questions, you can always get in touch with us. It's radio@rnab.org.uk.
I swear by the moon and the stars in the skies, and I swear like the shadow that's by your side.
I see the questions in your eyes. I know what's weighing on your mind. You can be sure I know my part. 'Cause I stand beside you through the years. You'll only cry those happy tears. And though I make mistakes, I'll never break your heart. And I swear by the moon and the stars and the skies, I'll be there. I swear, like the shadow that's by your side, I'll be there. For better or worse, till death do us part, I love you with every beat of my heart.
Your dreams with these two hands. We'll hang some memories on the walls. And when just the two of us are there, you won't have to ask if I still care. 'Cause as the time turns the page,
really taking me back, that one. All for One with I Swear on the Happy Hour and on RNAB Connect Radio. Now, I did say we will be chatting a little bit about one way that you can stay active, and which is sailing. And our Toby Davey has been speaking with visually impaired sailor Emily Wright, who's had some great successes this year, and she's been telling our Toby Davey all about it and how she got into sailing.
Time to catch up with visually impaired sailor Emily Wright here on RNIB Connect Radio. The last time we chatted with Emily, it was just after she had competed in her first yacht race with Round the Island Race. This time it's match racing, as Emily has just come back from a blind match racing championships in France. Hello, Emily, and welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So this time, Emily, it is all about blind match racing, which is very different to the Round the Island race, where you were in a yacht on a start line with dozens and dozens of boats, whilst match racing is very different because it's just one boat against another. And I wondered how you found it doing the match racing for the first time. How was the event for you?
I mean, I was very excited to go because obviously it was my first competition, but it was also an international competition. So that was very exciting. And I wasn't expecting to necessarily do that well, but I wanted to learn lots, get lots of coaching, meet lots of other visually impaired sailors and learn their little tricks and ways that they do things on a boat. And yeah, I managed to do that and more, which was brilliant.
And blind match racing is very different to blind fleet racing, where you have a mixture of vision impaired and sighted crew on board the boat. While with match racing, it's just the visually impaired sailors with no sighted sailors on board at all. But obviously you've got sounds on the boats and sounds on the buoys marking the course. How did you find it using the sounds and getting around the course and maybe inflicting a sort of infringement of the rules on your opposition and getting them to have a penalty?
Yeah, it was certainly interesting. So with my practice with the GBR blind sailing lot throughout this year, we've practiced with sound buoys mocking up a start line before, and I've done a bit of practice there with a sighted person on board and a bit without, but I've never done a full course trying to get around the sound buoys before, and I've never practiced with the other boat making sounds depending on whether they're on starboard or port tack. So there was a lot of that new stuff to take in and work out how to use all that information, you know, shouting at you from all these different boats. So yeah, I was a bit nervous to start with, but I had some really great crew on board. So I had an Italian B1 on the jib, and he'd done quite a lot of competitions before, so he was very good at working out where the sound buoys were and giving that information to us. And I had a sighted lady who was blindfolded on main, and she'd done a lot of practice doing blindfolded sailing with one of the French B1s before. And again, she knew her details of racing in general, but not necessarily blind racing. So we all worked it out as we went along.
And was she doing the tactics, or were you doing the tactics whilst you're helming?
Whilst I was helming, I was doing the tactics mainly, because it was a lot easier with me on helm to be able to, there was some shifty winds, to be able to feel those, you know, those headers and things. But it was always a group decision. We were new to each other, so I would always kind of go, oh, how do people feel about tacking now? And we'd decide whether as a team we were ready. And then between races, that's when Massimo, our Italian jib trimmer, was very good at talking about, oh, we're on yellow start this time, so let's try and do this slightly differently and stuff. So having that range of experience was really helpful.
And match racing, people may have seen, obviously, the America's Cup, which is probably has a lot more money than blind match racing and faster boats and everything else. But it is a bit like playing chess on the water. And as tactician, you've got a lot to sort of deal with. You're thinking about where the other boat is. You're obviously listening out for the sounds of the boys marking the course and everything else. And there's a lot to sort of take on. Are you good at doing that sort of thing, sort of having to process all that information and make sort of tactical, sort of, tactical decisions at a very, I suppose, very quick point?
Yeah, so my first couple of races, I was just hoping to pass the start line and not get in any kind of tight situations and all of that. So we were just aiming on sailing fast and hoping to find the buoys and all of this, because yeah, we were a new team and it was my first time competing. And after a couple of practices, we realized we were doing that fairly well. So then it moved on to trying to, you know, push other boats over the line early, get penalties on them and all of this kind of stuff. So it was a learning on the job experience, but we managed to do that and quite quickly. There was a few near misses and a few bumps here and there, but there always is in match racing. And yeah, we were learning about when you can call penalties on people, and we got a few penalties ourselves, and you know, it's all very exciting stuff. But yeah, learning when you have to make those quick decisions, obviously it's good for it to be a team decision sometimes, but sometimes it just has to be, no, we're tacking now, I think there's a boat nearby, you know, all of that. But all good fun and all a big learning curve.
What do you think you're going to take away from the experience of competing in your first match racing championships? And would you continue with match racing or just any type of racing?
I mean, I learned so much. There was lots of manoeuvres and things that, yeah, we either got penalties at or maybe didn't. And it was great because we had the motorboat with our coaches come up and explain, oh, you could have done this, or it was good that you did that. And now I've got that kind of store of those experiences in my brain. So when they come up again, I can remember what I did or well or what I didn't do so well. So bringing that to my next races is invaluable, really. And yeah, I definitely want to race again. I'm doing some friendly stuff in J70s with my uni lot this weekend. The following weekend, I've got the sailability keel boat competition in RS21s, and that's with blind sailing again. So yeah, any chance to get out on a boat and yeah, doing the more competitive side of things now is great. I really enjoyed the match racing. I think actually having the sound boys out gives me as a sailor the independence to make those decisions myself and be in control of your own destiny without the need of a sighted guide feels really cool. But actually I was thrown in at the deep end a little bit there. So yeah, coming back and doing a bit of fleet stuff with the continuous support of a sighted guide with help with coaching and stuff that way will be also a really good experience to learn more and just do more racing.
And I think you actually came third in the end, didn't you?
Yeah, so my aim going there was just to cross the line and hopefully find the course. And we ended up getting there, and despite language barriers and all of this, actually doing very well. So I was really pleased. And it's nice to come away with that and be able to, you know, show that I can learn quickly on the job in that way, so that, you know, to give other people the idea of my experience so that I can go on both non-sighted boats and able-bodied boats and carry on with my sailing experience and career, I guess.
Well, thank you very much again, Emily, for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio, and maybe we'll chat again after your next Blind Sailing Championships.
Brilliant. Thank you. Bye.
Toby Davey there speaking with a visually impaired sailor, Emily Wright. Now, coming up on the happy hour, we'll be hearing from Nikki Coburn about her counselling service, and it's called Find the Way Counselling. That's coming up after Van Morrison and a new one from Mark Owen coming up after.
Free mental wellbeing check-ins are available for anyone with sight loss who is struggling with their mental wellbeing. It will help you to address some of the feelings created by the current situation, including anxiety and distress, and to recognise that accepting you have these feelings is a positive step. In an hour-long session over the phone, you'll have the space to share feelings, explore coping strategies, and identify any further support needs you may have. Book today by visiting www.rnib.org.uk/mental-wellbeing-check-in or call 0303 123 9999.
From RNIB, the UK's leading sight loss charity, this is RNIB Connect Radio.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. It's often said that losing a guide dog is like losing a best friend. But how do we deal with such a loss? Well, there's someone that understands and can offer support. Nikki Coburn started a counseling service which was inspired by her beautiful guide dog. And she's here with us today on the Happy Hour to tell us a little bit more. Nikki, it is lovely having you on the show today.
Oh, thanks, Pauline. No, it's lovely to be here.
So let's talk about your counseling service, because it was inspired by, well, quite a sad event in your life.
It was, yeah. I have had two guide dogs. I'm currently with my third guide dog, a lovely Labrador called James. And in 2019, in February, my previous guide dog, she'd been retired for 3 years and she was living with my mum, and she died. And lots of listeners will probably know when you have a guide dog, you go through two types of grieving. So you grieve when the harness is taken away and you have to retire the guide dog. But then you also go through the kind of the natural grieving process when they die. And Chelsea was, I mean, everyone says their guide dog's brilliant, but you know, Chelsea was obviously, I'm very biased, but she was a lovely dog. And I wanted to be able to talk to people about her. I wanted to be able to talk to people who understood what it was like to lose a guide dog. And I had very well-meaning people saying, I know exactly what it's like. And it's like with every, you know, everything in grief, every single type of grief is different. And at that time, they only offered the listening service. So anyone who has a guide dog who died or is retired is pointed to that. And I emailed them and they were nice, but again, I wanted to be able to have someone who really understood. I applied to do a counselling course through the Adult Learning Centre at Cardiff University. I kind of felt a bit lost after Chelsea died and I was like, what am I doing with my life? What do I actually want to do? And I did that for 10 weeks and I really enjoyed it. And the lady said, well, why don't you actually apply for postgraduate diploma? So I did that and we covered loss. And it just struck me that loss encompasses everything. It can encompass when you lose your sight, it encompasses when you lose your job. I think all of us know about loss with COVID. You know, we lost loved ones, we lost ourselves, you know, we lost our place in the world. So when I set up my counselling service, one of the things I really wanted to do was to have that safe space where any assistance dog owners can talk about retiring their dog or when their dog dies. And also anyone who wants to get a guide dog because it's emotionally draining at times. You know, you've got to be so good to the public, understandably. But there are days when you just want to shout, and obviously that's not helpful. So if you can learn how to manage those feelings of when you're out and about and people keep stopping you to, you know, to say, talk to the dog, then I can teach people those skills as well that are going to make themselves not only feel better, but it will make the public have more positive feelings towards us.
Now, I know you're helping others right now, but do you think when you kind of redirected your focus into the studies, into understanding counseling and learning about counseling, was it in a way your way of processing the grief that happened and learning how to deal with it as well personally?
I think so. I remember writing in a counselling essay once that when you do a counselling course, you almost have to unlearn who you thought you were. And I had to learn how to find my way in a world without Chelsea. But I also had to be conscious that I had a guide dog. You know, I had James and, you know, he needed me. And I needed to be the best person that I could in order to support him because, you know, dogs do grieve as well. He sort of went off the rails for a little bit and decided that being a guide dog wasn't for him. And I had to be very gentle with him and I had to be very understanding. And I was talking to my trainer and she said, you know, Nick, you've got a very empathic guide dog. I didn't really realise that, you know, you have to take it into account that they're grieving as well.
He probably picked up on your emotions and it kind of amplified them for him as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Now, you did a very interesting thing with your counseling services because you actually picked quite a unique name, and I have to say, I love the connection.
Thank you.
Would you mind telling us a
Yeah.
little bit more about it and like explaining what the connection is? Because I think it's called Find the Way.
It is, yes. I really agonized over what to call it. Understandably, almost any counseling name that you want was taken. I thought about guiding steps. And then I was just walking along one day and I suddenly thought, why don't I call it Find the Way? And that's one of the commands that we have as guide dog owners, particularly when there's lots of obstacles, there's a crowd, and you don't quite know where you're going. And it's very similar to working a guide dog to actually having clients. So the way it was put to me during my first day of training with James was that we are the navigator and the dog is the pilot. And that's the same as the client. So the client will come in and they will say, right, I've got anxiety, or I'm struggling to relate to a work colleague at work who keeps putting me down, or whatever the situation is. And we help them the way that guide dogs do, and we help them to find a more manageable path.
I think it's also a really nice way to put it, because there's no one answer to people's anxieties or problems or issues in life. Like, we kind of need this very personal approach from a counsellor to find something that works for us as a solution.
Definitely. And I think that's why counselling is so important. And I say to people that it is such an investment for people to have counselling, because it not only helps them feel better, but it will help them with all their relationships. So it'll help them relate to their children. If they've got them, it'll help them to relate to their, you know, their work colleagues. And if they feel better about themselves, they're going to be more productive. They're going to be happier. And so many more people benefit from just the clients. So it's a fantastic thing to do for your self-care.
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget that as human beings, we don't have all the answers. And sometimes it's nice to reach out to someone that might have the answer we are looking for, or a really simple solution that we would have never come up with by ourselves because we're not trained in it.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, counselling is so impartial. It's non-judgmental, you know, I mean, there's nothing that you could tell your counsellor that would shock them. And if you want to cry, you're not going to have people saying, oh, don't be so silly. You know, so many people are going through that. Just pull yourself together. And, you know, we don't give advice. We don't sort of ever say, well, I can make you better. I can do this. But yeah, you're right. It's just another perspective, and it's just someone else to listen. And, you know, there's lots of questions. I remember once my tutor said, you need to, because he said, who's your favourite journalist? And I said, Louis Theroux. And he said, well, you need to channel your Louis Theroux. So when I'm stuck with a client, I just think, what question would Louis ask? And yeah, it's a really good thing for people to do.
I have to say, that's a really good example to choose there, because he loves people. He really wants to hear from them. So I feel like that's what you want from your counsellor. You really want them to be invested into what you're telling them.
Definitely, yeah, you know, and there will be lots of questions, but like you said before, sometimes people don't really know what the problem is. You know, they don't know why they're sad, they don't know what the matter is, and just having those questions suddenly turns a light bulb on and you think, oh, so that happened, I'm still holding on to that. And yeah, I mean, and another thing is that the waiting list times at the minute are just so ridiculously long that people need counselling and they need to find out what's the matter now.
Yeah, because mental health has just absolutely plummeted after COVID. And I think many people are realising that they do need this extra support. Now, you do something called integrative counselling. And does that differ from traditional counselling, or is it similar? What would we expect to see if we had a counselling session with you?
I always liken it to being a chef. So when you're cooking a meal for someone, you don't assume that you know what they're going to like. So integrative counselling is lots of different modalities rolled into one. So I will find out what their issues are. So the client will say, you know, for instance, I lost a really good friend. I'm really struggling because I really miss them. Whatever it might be, they might just be anxious. They might just say, I'm lying, you know, awake at night. I've got all these thoughts going through in my head saying, you know, you can't do that. You're this, you're that. If they've got thoughts buzzing around in their head and they want to know how to deal with that, that would come under something called cognitive behavioural therapy, which is all about thoughts, feelings and behaviours. And we can help people to change those, we call them negative automatic thoughts. And they're like gnats, you know, those little annoying flies. And they go around in our head all day and we just want them to keep quiet. So counselling will help you. Or you might say, you know, something happened to me when I was very small. I've always thought that I'm useless. I've always thought that I can't do anything. People have always said you'll never amount to anything. You will explore what we call relational patterns. And then you can try and help people to, again, think, you know, do they serve me well now? They might have served you well when you were younger. They might not. But now that we're adults, you know, there's different ways of thinking from when you were a child. So interactive counselling is just all these types of counselling that I know and all these therapies that I know and how they might help the client. And again, it might not be useful. So I might want to do a cognitive restructuring exercise with them, which is where we get people to sort of reprocess the thoughts from negative ones to more perhaps realistic ones or more positive ones. And someone might say, oh, I don't really find that very helpful. So we might do a guided imagery and we might get them to sort of visualize the life they want and talk about that and how they might find ways of making life better.
So it's trying out different, I guess, types of therapy and counseling and just figuring out which one can really help my client and which one really works for them, because not everything works for everyone.
That's true. I mean, you know, I don't get on with mindfulness. So, you know, if my therapist sat there and suddenly started saying, let's do some deep breathing, it doesn't do anything for me, doesn't make me relax. But some people love it. You know, I've worked with clients on my placements and they found it really, really helpful. So, yeah, it's just finding out what kind of things people like, finding out what they don't like and incorporating it into something that's going to really help them.
I really love that metaphor about being a chef and looking for a recipe, Nikki. Now, would you mind telling us where can we find out more about your counselling work or if there's a really easy way to get in touch with you?
You can either email me on info@findthewaycounselling.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter @counsellingfind. And the website is Find the Way Counselling, and counselling's got two L's, .co.uk.
Fantastic. And Nikki Coburn, it was lovely speaking with you today, and thank you so much for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you, Paulina.
Now, Nikki will be back at the end of the happy hour. She will introduce today's music therapy moment, so definitely stick around for that.
I've never been closer. Tried to understand that certain feeling carved by another's hand. Oh, but it's too late to hesitate. We can't keep on living like this. Leave no track.
Done.
Heaven 17 with Temptation. What a great track on today's Happy Hour. Now remember, you can listen to our Happy Hour podcast online. Just search for RNIB Happy Hour podcast and you can find all the interviews you've heard today as well as all our previous episodes. Now we are going to hear a very personal story. Our Barry Snow has been speaking with Bernie Warren, who has been sharing her story of a sight loss diagnosis.
Sight loss can present itself in many different ways and stages and can have a huge impact on our day-to-day lives. We've been asking people to share a wee bit about themselves and their sight loss stories and how it's affected and shaped their day-to-day lives. And today I'm joined by Bernie Warren, who has agreed to share hers. So thanks for joining us, Bernie. Now, you were fully sighted up until your 20s. And it all began for you when you were told you had diabetes.
Yeah, I was diagnosed in 1996. I was actually expecting my first child when I was diagnosed. So it was a little bit of a shock, really. But I was told it would go, you know, pretty quickly after I'd had my child. So I wasn't too worried at that point.
Unfortunately, though, it did lead to complications with your eyes, didn't it?
So my diabetes didn't go away once I was diagnosed. So unfortunately, and I didn't get any complications really until 2011 when I was diagnosed with diabetic macular edema.
Tell us a bit more about the condition and how it affects the eye, please.
Yeah, so diabetic macular edema is a type of diabetic retinopathy, and it can affect a whole host of issues within your eyes. Really, at the most important part of your vision is at the macula, and it's your macula that you need a really healthy one to be able to see people's faces and be able to read things. Yeah, a whole host of things that are done, and that's a really important part of your eyes. And with diabetic macular edema, that is where you get extra fluid edema, and it can make real issues for you to see things, particularly the fine details of things like faces and reading and colours and that sort of thing.
That must have been a tough time, and it must have had a huge impact on your family life, your work life even.
Well, I was a teacher at the time, and I was working with really small children, so 3 and 4 year olds, which I was absolutely loving. And it really began to affect my sight and my work, because I could no longer really recognise the children. I couldn't recognise colours. I wasn't able then to read from the whiteboard. So yeah, it affected my work, I mean, so greatly that unfortunately within a year I lost my job as a teacher, which was for me absolutely devastating. And the year later, so I lost my job in 2012, but in 2013 I then lost the ability to drive, and my children were quite young at the time, so they depended on someone to take them around. My husband, you know, can drive, and he would do a lot of the ferrying around, but yeah, it was a real impact on my children because I they would have to get lifts from other people or miss out on things, you know, which was challenging for all of us.
And as you were adapting to all this, Bernie, did you ever suffer any negative stuff when out and about?
Well, I think, you know, when you have been fully sighted and then you're sort of become, you know, partially sighted, and I was registered in 2016, I think if you come across sight loss later on in life, I think people find it harder to adjust to that for you. So people forgot to say who they were when they were approaching me, or they didn't give me format of print that I could then see because they just weren't used to that sort of thing. So I think that's been really difficult for them to adjust, not just myself, but the people around me as well. I find transport sometimes difficult to get to places. So I'm under a particular hospital for some of my care and I actually can't get there by public transport. There's no possible way. So I'm having to move hospitals for my care so I can actually go to one that I can get to, because they just have not thought of people that don't drive. And that's really difficult. You know, I've found that really hard.
Obviously, if you're new to sight loss, you can often feel helpless and unsure of who to speak to. But for you, RNIB have been a big help.
RNIB have been absolutely brilliant in so many ways, and I've used them for so many things. So, for example, when I was really confused about my eye conditions and I got one, then I got another, and on top of another, I would phone their RNIB. Their eye health team have been brilliant. They really would help me to understand some of the conditions I have. I would read the letters to them because the language is sometimes really complicated and very medical, so they'd help me to understand that. I actually lead a Braille book club now, and they've been great. The RNIB library have been great at sending out books for us in hard copy for those that don't have any Braille displays. That's been really good. RNIB have been great in just helping me to adjust to sight loss, because for me it's relatively new. And it's a minefield of understanding what's going on, not only physically, but emotionally as well. So they've been fantastic in helping me in so many different aspects of what sight loss brings.
Do you have a song or a place, Bernie, that's made a lasting impression on you?
Yeah, well, I'm actually a Christian, so I go to church, and I my faith is so incredibly important to me. So there's a song called How Great Is Our God, and that is really, really important song for me, because it talks about the fact that, you know, he's a great God, really. And he is. He knows exactly what he's doing in my life. And my faith has been so important. That song really does emphasize for me what he's done and how he knows my journey and how he's making my journey better than I even thought it would be.
And finally, what advice could you share for anyone that is new to sight loss?
As I have done, I think, I would try and focus on things you can do and not things you can't. That has really helped me. It's hard to put the things down that you used to be able to do, but actually I've found new things. So open your eyes to what you can do. And I mean that in, you know, many ways, really. There are things that you can do still with sight loss. I've done far more with my life since my sight loss, you know, and it's made me a stronger person in many ways. And I've had opportunities I never would have had if I hadn't encountered sight loss. So even though it's a different life, it is definitely a life worth living. Just embrace it and look out for things, the opportunities that you can have to make your life something that is something you can be proud of. It's hard when you have sight loss. You know, I cried for ages. I really did struggle at the beginning, but actually I found, you know, that really, really focusing on those things I can do has really helped me to move on with my life. It's a different life to what I was expecting to live, but actually, for me, I think it's a better life. So that's what I would say.
Bernie Warren, thanks very much indeed for sharing your story with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Barry Snell there. And now, if you would like to share your own story of sight loss, or perhaps maybe just chat to us about your passion, something that makes you very happy and you would like to share with all of us, you can always get in touch. We're on social media, RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook and at RNIB Radio on Twitter, or our email is radio@rnib.org.uk. Now we have one more track coming up, and then Nikki's going to be back to introduce her music therapy moment. And I have to say, I already hinted today what it is. That's all coming up after A Baby, I Can Hold You and Tracy Chapman.
Sorry, it's all that you can say. Years gone by and still words don't come easily. Like sorry, forgive me.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNAB Connect Radio. And we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much for listening. It's time to hear today's music therapy moment choice. And of course, Nikki Coburn is going to come back to introduce it. Now, if you would like to share your own music therapy choice, of course, you can do that as well. Just drop us a line. It's radio@rnab.org.uk. But for now, I'm going to let Nikki play us out.
Hi, it's Nikki. I have chosen my music therapy track, and I've chosen Times Like These by Foo Fighters. I'm a huge Foo Fighters fan, and this is one of my favourites. And I think at this particular time when things are really difficult, you know, we're just emerging from COVID, it's still going on, but we're slowly coming out. And the financial crisis and everything that's going on in the world, the words are just really poignant. So yeah, that's my music therapy track, Times Like These by the Foo Fighters.
Times like these, time and time again.